The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to NJSBA's Blog Talk Radio Show, Conversations on New Jersey Education, a show dedicated to creating a conversation among those of us in the education community and beyond on the important education issues of the day, a conversation that brings the state leaders to you, and I hope that you feel free to join us. My name is Ray Penny, and I'll be your host this morning. Today, we will not only be taking your calls, but we also have the chat room open. I think this gives you another avenue in which to participate in the show. Anne-Marie will be taking the calls and screening the calls this morning. We only have a 30-minute show, so we probably won't get to most of them. Anne-Marie, could you please explain the process? Hold it.
Yes, Ray, I would be happy to. To call in, dial 1-347-989-8904. When you are ready to make a comment or ask a question, press 1. That will indicate on my switchboard that you are ready to ask a question. I'll get your name and your question or topic. Also, if you are on the phone line, I will ask you to turn down the volume on your computer and only listen on the phone since there will be a delay and it is confusing. If you are just listening on your computer, we do have a chat room feature that you can log on to. We will be monitoring the chat room and will pass on some of the comments or questions to our speaker. To log on the chat room, you will need to register with Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. The New Jersey legislature is in its lame duck session. Governor Christie has made it known he wants his educational agenda preferably sooner than later, rather than later. While Governor Christie would like to move his agenda now, the process requires that he works with both the New Jersey Senate and the Assembly. Both houses are controlled by the Democrats. We're fortunate to have with us this morning the President of the Senate, Senator Stephen Sweeney from Gloucester County, who, despite having some distinct policy differences with the governor, has been able to work with the governor and compromise with him to pass legislation such as the pension and health benefit reform measure. Senate President Sweeney has been in the Senate since 2002 and president since 2010. Before that, he sat on the Gloucester County Board of Freeholders, and he was also served as director of the Freeholder Board. Welcome, Senate President Sweeney.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
My pleasure. Let's start with last summer. I was out in June, and there was a lot of union protesters out there, and landmark legislation that you helped pass was the pension and health benefit reform package. And I know you took some heat from your colleagues on your Democratic aisle, and so did Speaker Oliver. And you're also a union member, too. Why do you think – explain to our listeners why you felt you needed to pass that legislation.
Right, because the system was going bankrupt. And unfortunately, you know, instead of people being honest with, you know, all the public employees about the health or position of the pension system, no one wanted to talk about the realities that it was going broke. Right, everyone wants to say that, well, if the state made their payments, yeah, that's a valid point. But the real problem was that there's a thing called an assumption rate with the pension. You assume your investments are going to make, in the state of New Jersey, we assume the investments every year are going to make 8.25%. Well, over the last decade, we made 2% a year, and no one made up that money, and that compounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, besides, you know, if you look through the history of what was done with the pension, lowering the retirement age with no money, reducing the contribution that teachers and public employees paid for a while, you know, and then increasing everyone's pension by 9%, retirees and everyone with no money, well, that's the problem. And see, as a labor person that deals with pensions, and this is what I do for a living, that's not how you deal with pensions. You have actuaries come in, they tell you this is what the number is, you know, and we didn't make enough money, you need to make these changes. Well, no one wanted to deal honestly with these people, and you know, this is how it works in the real world, and it needs to work in the government world, because we've promised a lot of people pension, you know, a pension, and we want to make sure it's there for them. The pension was going to be broke in 2018, and people started running out the door thinking, well, I'll retire now, and this way they can't get me. Well, guess what? They can get you.
Yeah.
And they, you know what I mean? And they can reduce your pension. Because if I only have $50 in the bank and I got to write a $100 check, I can't write that $100 check. So this was not emotional for me at all, right?
Okay.
It was for me doing the right things by working people to ensure their pension is going to be there. So they're going to have the promise that was made. And the health care reform, honestly, needed to happen for taxpayers. So it was a balance.
All right. So you, in the long run, you think it will benefit all of the teachers and all the public unions, workers?
Absolutely.
In the long run,
because of these reforms, you're going to be able to keep more teachers. You're going to be able to keep more firefighters and police officers. Look, it's never easy when you tell somebody you got to change. But This state is a financial train wreck. And, right, we did in that pension and health care reform, we have bound the state to make their payments, which I think is a very good thing. Well, in 6 years, we're going to be putting $6 billion, not million, $1 billion in the pension system.
Wow.
Follow my math here. Our budget was roughly $29.6 billion.
So an additional $6 billion.
Yes. And if I'm going to be optimistic and say in 6 years the budget will grow to $34 billion. And so take $34 billion minus 6 gives you 28. 6 years from now, just because of the pension, we're going to have $1.5 billion less than we have today. So how do I fund schools? How do I fund police? How do I, provide services? So, you know, I know
something had to give.
You know, people didn't like it, but something had to give. Otherwise, you know, you would have people saying, what happened? I was promised a pension. And I didn't want to be the one that said I told you so or that I was right. You know, because it's not about saying I was right or I told you so. This was just something that has been in the works for years. And, you know, prior leadership in the past, you know, it's nice to, you know, union officials are elected officials. They get elected in their unions. It's nice to go back to your membership and say, look what I did for you. What did it cost? Oh, it didn't cost anything. Wow, these guys are great. Well, it had everything. There's no free ride. If it looks too good, it is too good.
So we
dealt with it in a real way.
Now, you kind of alluded to it before. You have this obligation coming up. And what about school funding? Because I know, and you probably have heard the governor say, and I don't know if he's talked to you, and that would be part of my question, that Commissioner Cerf and the governor are kind of looking at a new school funding formula. What are your thoughts on that? I'm not sure if the governor's approached you on that.
I absolutely disagree with the governor. We came up with a funding formula that passed constitutional muster, that did away with habits. And if we had funded the schools, the formula, we wouldn't have this problem we just had with these court cases. So the way I look at it, to be perfectly honest with you, is the governor, there's nothing wrong with our funding formula. The governor has to fund it. And we could have funded it. We could have fully funded it with the addition of a millionaire's tax. And the governor chose, the governor chose not to fund it because he didn't want to raise taxes on the wealthy and rather just raise taxes on everyone else.
Moving on, the governor's been pushing a pretty aggressive education reform agenda in all aspects.
Yeah.
One of the bills he's looking at, is teacher tenure reform. I know in the Senate, Senator Ruiz has a bill up there. Do you have any thoughts on how her tenure reform bill, will that move?
We're working hard to come up with a tenure reform bill that we think will work. And Senator Ruiz has put a lot of time and effort into it, and I'm looking at her bill. whether it's her bill or a version of her bill. You know, we are going to pass tenure reform. Again, it could be lame duck. There's a possibility it will not get done in lame duck, but tenure reform is going to come to New Jersey. I can tell you that right now. And it needs to be real, right? And what it needs to be harder to obtain and easier to rid ourselves of bad teachers. So, you know, Senator Ruiz has put, I mean, she's tackled probably one of the toughest issues that I've ever seen since I've been in the legislature.
There's one component of that bill, and I have to represent the School Board Association, probably the superintendent, that changes the way who hires and transfers employees. It shifts it to the principal from the superintendent and the board. Do you think that will stay in the bill, or is there a possibility that that might be modified?
There's discussions on how that's going to work, how that piece is going to work. Because, you know, depending, look, in my part of the state, the southern part of the state, you know, a lot of school districts don't have HR directors. You know, it's the superintendent's the person that's doing a lot of the lifting down there. So to be perfectly honest with you, that's something that we have to shake out still on how that final piece is going to look.
Yeah, and that's, I think, some of the concern that I've heard and is that sometimes we have this one-size-fits-all, and what may work in Essex County may not work in Gloucester County. The governor is also pushing charter schools, virtual charter schools. What's the Democrats in the Senate, your position on charter schools? Do you think we should have a moratorium on them? Should we take a step back? There's been some pushback from people in the South and the Cherry Hill region on a new charter school being put in.
Well, you know, listen, I don't think, you know, I'm not opposed to charter schools, but I don't think charter schools are the answer. I mean, I think they could be a piece of the answer. But, you know, in these times, like Cherry Hill is a very good school district. And to create a charter school to take more funding, that's going to take more funding out of the public education system, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, and obviously I understand why people are up in arms about the Cherry Hill situation. You know, again, right, charter schools can play a role, but it's not really the answer. Because, you know, there's bad charter schools. There's good charters, there's bad charters. So, you know, charters need to be in the discussion, but not they're not solely the answer.
There's, I think it was in the Assembly, I don't think it's moved in the Senate yet, a bill to have the community have some input into the process through either a vote of some sort. What's your feeling on something like that?
Again, that's something that we're discussing right now, to be perfectly honest with you, because it's something that has to be discussed. You know, do we have a vote in certain areas and not in others? You know, because that's one of the debates that we're dealing with. Can you require a vote in, say, a suburban area and not require a vote in an urban area because of the need for competition in certain places? Again, some charter schools, you know, in Cherry Hill, I think if it was up to the voters, it wouldn't have passed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we are, again, going to be looking at in lame duck.
So this is going to be an interesting lame duck.
On the Senate side, we'll be looking at it. Lame ducks are always very interesting.
Yes. There's the Opportunity Scholarship Act. That's been around for quite a while, and each time it seems to move a little bit further along. Is there a chance? What we've been hearing is that it might be something that might move in this session or beyond.
Well, look, I've seen at least 15 versions, it feels, of the bill. So, you know, it's hard to comment on an Opportunity Scholarship Act bill until we finally see a version that people agree to. Because at this point, I know, like, Senator Lesniak is very opposed to, you know, he's the sponsor of the bill in the Senate. Moving a bill that doesn't have his hometown Elizabeth in it. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
How do you, he's the sponsor of the bill. So we got to see what a bill's going to look like first. And honestly, it continues to change. Everyone's been working very hard on it. But, you know, some of my concern is that, again, it's money out of public education. But then look at Camden the city of Camden, and that's even a greater concern for me because we're seeing too many children failing in Camden. And being from southern New Jersey, we want to help these kids. And people say it's socioeconomic issues. Well, in Camden right now, there's 2,500 children on the waiting list to go to a charter school. Now, it's a specific, it's a specific school they want to go to. It's not just anyone. But again, you have families that care about their kids, whether it's an uncle, an aunt, a mother, a father, you know, whatever. They don't want their children going to a school where they feel the school's failing.
All right. We have a caller, Karen, from Closter. Let me get her on.
Yes,
Karen, you wanted to thank Senator Sweeney about a bill,
yes,
and
ask
him a question?
Yes. First off, I'd like to thank you very much for the bill requiring the creation of the Reading Disabilities Task Force, Senator.
Thanks.
I think it was certainly a bill long overdue in our state. And I'm just wondering what you'd like to see the Reading Disabilities Task Force accomplish, and what's the status of that task force right now?
God, I don't have the status of the task force off the top of my head, but what we would like to accomplish is to give us a roadmap to help children that have reading disabilities. You know what I mean? It's pretty simple, you know? We know we have children that are struggling, and we want to find a way the most effective way of helping our children.
Yeah, I think one of the issues, Senator, is that there's such a lack of awareness out there about reading disabilities. You know, the National Institute of Health.
That's what drove the bill.
I'm sorry?
That's what drove the bill, is we want to make there a greater awareness, because there is, as you said, a lack of knowledge.
Right. Yeah, I know. The National Institute of Health research indicates 20% of our population has some form of a reading disability. And even in our highest performing districts in our state, when you look at NJF's performance on the language arts section, close to 20% of kids in our highest performing districts score partially proficient in language arts, which, again, may be due to other reasons. But given NIH statistics, the NJF scores, it all comes back to, it would seem, you know, reading disabilities. And, you know, how can we get there to improve those numbers? Because they're dramatically high numbers in terms of kids succeeding in the future. If you can't read at grade level, it seems like a monumental problem in our state.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. I'm going to have to put you on hold. You can still listen. Any other comments on that, Senator?
No. I'm glad she brought this issue up, because it's a crisis. Be perfectly honest with you, when you have kids that can't read, how are they going to be successful in life? And the percentage is much higher. And people, you know, when you start looking at stats and you have, successful school districts where kids are not performing well. You know, these are issues that we need to really focus on and find ways to assist our children in our schools and helping these kids learn.
Okay, you know, before I move on to another topic, I see there was a caller had a question, and this is something that's popping up. And I would guess that the legislature is probably going to have to deal with this one. We talked about charter schools before. Clara, I'll put you on. She has a question about virtual charter schools or virtual schools. Clara?
Yes, hi.
Can you ask a brief question?
Sure. President Sweeney, I don't know if you're aware of what's going on in Teaneck, but we recently received an application for a virtual charter school, which is asking for us to set aside $15 million of our budget, which is 20% of our operating budget. And what our question is it will obviously have a devastating impact to our school system. What we're asking is, what is your position on virtual charter schools? And this can be a multiple district school. And also, what can we do at this point to stop this?
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Clara, and you can listen to this senator.
Okay.
Well, honestly, you know, charters, virtual or non-virtual charter schools are a problem because they're popping up in places where we think the school districts are successful, and they're only taking needed resources from the successful school districts, which will create a district that's going to, obviously, they're going to start to fail, especially when you take some of the resources away from them. So, you know, we in the Senate, you know, want to have a much, much more, not much more, but a more of a discussion on the impact that these charter schools are doing, especially in districts where they're, we're not failing. You know, that they're just taking resources that will then will create the school district to fail. So we got to tackle this thing, and I'm sure we'll be tackling it early next year.
Yeah. Because I don't think you can tackle these broad statements by the end of the lame duck. But are charter schools in a different place than they were when the legislation is passed now? I mean, do we have to relook at the entire charter school legislation even?
Yeah, I think you do, you know, because, you know, it seems we're going beyond what we thought the need was.
Right.
And we need to rein it in somewhat. And again, where there's a need, there should be, and that's honestly when we were talking about Opportunity Scholarship Act, which is a different piece, is people focusing on areas where we're struggling and not being successful. You know, again, the charter movement has exploded in this state, and not in a good way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, the governor, when he was on the show, even said he thought he would like to focus charter schools more in the areas where they're needed. Where there's failing school districts or failing students. So I think we'll probably come to agreement.
Yeah, I think we will because, you know, again, Cherry Hill is the perfect example. And the example I just got about TNEC, you're going to take 20% of the budget aside for a virtual charter school. And, you know, we're going to cripple our schools by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, there has to be a much more encompassing discussion when you're, you know, it can't be, well, just throw this one in here and throw that one in there. And that's what it seems like is going on now.
Okay, I'm going to shift gears. There was a bill placed in this week that would move, now it allows a school district and or a municipality to move their school board election to November, and also in that eliminate the school budget vote. It was placed in by Senator Norcross and Assemblyman Lou Greenwald.
Uh-huh.
Is that going to be moving in lame duck, or do you have any feel for that?
You know, I saw the bill. There's a real possibility that we'll take action on that bill in lame duck. You know, I've spoken to Senator Norcross about the bill. And, again, I think it's only fair that if a district stays within cap, then, you know, they've worked hard to stay within that cap because we know how hard we've made it, that they shouldn't have to go before the voters for a vote on that. So, you know, I think it's a fair trade-off by moving the election to November.
Why would what's the rationale by putting the municipality as a person entity that could decide that too? Why not just a school board or school district?
Well, because the municipality represents the taxpayers also.
Okay.
And the school budget is 2/3 of your local tax bill.
Right.
You know, and it's funny, as you know how school board elections are, it's 2/3 of the tax bill. But, you know, you have such a low turnout when people come out to vote on these things. But to be fair to schools that work hard to stay within that cap, and a lot of schools have, since we've implemented it, you shouldn't have to be fearful of getting your budgets shot down and reworked because you've worked hard enough to stay within a cap.
Okay. Moving forward, how do you envision working with the governor and also, I guess, Speaker Sheila Oliver? All three of you are going to be back.
It seems that way. You know, we're going to work with him where we think he's right, where he's right on the issues. We're not going to work with him where we think he's wrong. And I mean, we're going to stand our ground where we don't agree, and where we do agree. Look, when we did pension and healthcare reform, we didn't do it for ourselves. We did it for the taxpayers of the state. It was the right thing to do. I know people don't like the cap, but I felt strongly that we needed to do a cap because caps are forcing more shared services. People looking to find ways to save money. You know, interest arbitration reform, again, was an important bill to do for the taxpayers of this state. So, look, where it makes sense, we're going to work with him. Where we don't agree, we will not work with him. Obviously, where we agree, we'll work. Where we don't, we won't. But we're not going to just say, look, the election's over, so for the next 2 years, we're going to have gridlock so we can beat him. That's not our goal, and it's never been my goal. We have too many issues in the state that need to be addressed. And, you know, change isn't easy, but change needs to happen in order for the state to get in better shape. So, you know, again, you know, I'm sure we'll be doing things that will be angering people, and I'm sure we're going to do things that are going to make people happy. And we're going to work together where we can, and where we won't, we won't.
I have, like, two questions left. How do you see the role of the board member in our society, and how can we better improve ourselves as board members in passing legislation?
Listen, I school board members or the state board?
School board members.
I honestly, that's the toughest job in the world. I actually served on the school board for 1 year, and I would probably, if I was to do it a second year, would have never got into politics. I'm not kidding. And I'm not patronizing it, but I've never had such a difficult task because you're dealing with children. You know, you're dealing with people's children, and you're dealing with their futures. And I just think that, you know, the school board members have to be much more active in talking to their local legislators on issues of importance. I mean, I got to be honest with you. There's not a whole lot of interaction with me and my district with school boards. You know what I mean? You know, the School Boards Association, you got a good group that represents you in Trenton and lobbying for you, but I've been here 10 years. I might have met with a couple school districts. You know, honestly, I don't, you know, I'm not, look, you're there representing the school district. You know what needs to be done, but that, you know, you're in my community. You know what I'm saying? You're in my
right.
district. You guys need to, you know, you guys need to make a greater effort, in my mind, to get with your legislators and let them know what's going on in your schools and what the problems are, because we can see it from a distance, but you guys are on the front lines.
So you want them to tell you this funding formula, whatever the issue is, this is how it impacts the districts in your legislative district.
Sure. Listen, I have one of the biggest problems. I have some of the largest growing districts in the state, and we were flat funded. You know,
right.
You know the pressures of dealing with flat funding when you have enormous enrollment growth. Again, you know, but it's always better to hear from the people that are running the schools that are your neighbors. You know, again, that's, you know, it's not a knock. But I guess it's a little bit of a knock. Like I said, I've been in the legislature 10 years. I've had a couple school boards sit down with me. Swedesboro-Woolwich is one I can tell you that meets with me often, because they're one of those school districts that's had this enormous growth. And, you know, and they've been in our ears when we got legislation to deal with, extraordinary growth.
Okay. One other question. How do you see the budget moving next year? Schools are going to be putting their budget together. Do you think will it be a flat funding, or is it too early to tell?
It's way too early to tell. We have no idea what the numbers are going to look like. You know, there's certain points where you look, you know, where you start getting information and you can look at school budgets. We still strongly feel, I know if the Democrats do, that a millionaire's tax would relieve the burden of a lot of people. And right now, you know, the governor said, well, you know, these are job creators. Well, we still got 9.1% unemployment, and we've treated the millionaires with kid gloves. So I think that we're going to continue to go back and possibly even go to the voters to ask them if they want to see this, because it's not fair for everyone but 16,000 people to pay their share. And when we did our millionaires tax, you know, it's a true millionaires tax, which means your tax rate doesn't increase until the first dollar over a million. So it's not the small business people. It's not, You know, that's what the governor always said. When John Corzine did it, he was right. 63,000 people were affected by that tax increase.
Well, thank you.
16,000.
I'm going to have to end it there, Senator. I'd like to thank you for joining me. I think our board members appreciate you coming on and sharing your points of view. And you have an open invitation to join us whenever you want and express your opinion. And I look forward to working with you in the upcoming year.
Thanks, Ray. Take care.
Goodbye. And that ends our show. Oops, how do I move this? Oh. Uh-huh. Maybe you say all right.
It was hard. I talked about virtual, I wanted to get to the school election one, which is going to move down.
The question that was in the chat room was, how do we?
Well, I'm glad he said it.
I am too. It's been a real problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've had legislators come to our meetings and tell the legislators they need to make appointments.
He pretty much said what we always said.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are great, but I don't hear from my districts.
Right.
So, I'm using that for tomorrow. I'll email Clara and just tell her I had.
No, it was more about Clara.
No, but I know Clara, so I'll tell her that we can. It's coming.
Who?
It's a friend from Hoboken. I can't remember her last name.
Somewhere.
Lichman. She just registered with the call center, I guess. He was nice, though. He called me by my name. I didn't even ask him. That was one of the things. I didn't have time. I wanted to tell him to do that. Down-to-earth type guy.
Yeah, he does.
you know, it, he went on the pension for a long time. So I was like, I don't want to spend, you know, half the show on pension.
Well, you know, that's, it's challenging when they only have a half hour, you know. How long was Christy? Was she a half hour?
Half hour. Yeah. Well, she's actually not bad.
No, I mean, it's great, but...
You can't get into any questions, really.
Right.
I just have to learn the budget of my time. But, you know, like, I had to get them off towards the end. I'm like, oh, my God, this is supposed to be a 30-second. He's taking forever. So I had to, like, really just shut down the end. Because I knew I only had 20 seconds.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard-to-recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.